Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. You can find the Commonwealth Club on the internet at commonwealthclub.org, see our videos on YouTube, and catch up with us on Facebook and Twitter. I am Ladaris Cordell, a retired Superior Court judge and your moderator for the program. This program is part of the Commonwealth Club's Good Lit series, underwritten by the Bernard Osher Foundation. I'm now pleased to introduce Caitlyn Jenner, perhaps the world's most famous transgender woman and author of a new book, The Secrets of My Life. As a former Olympic athlete, Bruce Jenner became Caitlyn over the past few years. Her personal journey has been public, painful, inspiring, and controversial. Bruce Jenner, the celebrated Olympic icon, seemed to be living a dream life of success, fame, and prosperity. But the all-American image and million-dollar smile belied a lifelong struggle with gender dysphoria. And it wasn't until the Diane Sawyer interview 2 years ago that the public mask of Bruce Jenner was finally retired. And through the memorable Vanity Fair piece by Buzz Bissinger, that Caitlyn Jenner was introduced to the world and set free to exist on her own terms. So tonight, we are pleased to have her here to talk about that journey, what she has learned, and what she still hopes to accomplish. Please welcome Caitlyn Jenner. Welcome. Welcome.
LaDaris, let's get it going.
We shall.
We shall.
So I first
Hello,
must tell you.
Thank you for coming.
I first must tell you that I read your book, The Secrets of My Life, and it was a terrific read. It was readable, and I was so taken with how deeply this book went into your world, into your life. So I start off by asking you, why did you write this tell-all memoir? What did you hope to accomplish by writing it?
The main thing I wanted to accomplish is to free my soul of, there's nothing worse than going through life sneaking around. Not, number one, being honest with yourself, but honest with your family, honest with your loved ones, honest in my case, because I was a public figure, honest with as a public figure. It was the last thing I needed to do, from starting off with the original Diane Sawyer 2 years ago to, then Vanity Fair came out, then the ESPY Awards, and then I kind of stayed out of the media. I try to stay out of the media actually as much as I can and come out when I have something that I really need to say. And the next thing was this book. And I have, what I try to accomplish in the book is, it is my story. This is not what you call a self-help book, where I say, do this, this, and this to get better. This is a story of my journey. It was a long struggle about my stuff that's down in my soul. And in being honest and telling that and coming out the other end, a free spirit and a better person, hopefully people reading it and dealing with their stuff will have that reaction.
So you co-wrote this book with Buzz Bissinger. So
crazy Buzz.
So how did
love
you,
him to death.
How did you two work together? How long did it take, and what was the process like?
Oh boy, it was a very long process. It was really the story is a lifelong story. So the story was run for 65 years, but the process took 2 years. We had almost 8,000 pages of memoirs. I got a C in English, okay? Just today, we found out that between book sales and online sales and stuff, that number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list.
Wow. Wow.
In its first week. And I guarantee you, if my English teacher is still around, she's rolling over in her grave right now. I was a poor little dyslexic kid. So Buzz started with the Vanity Fair article. So Buzz was there even before I transitioned, before anything. Buzz was there and was there for the whole story. Plus, Buzz is a little crazy. We love that about him. And we just had such a great rapport. I wanted this book to show me and have a sense of humor. It's got to be funny.
It does. It has all of that.
Yeah, it's all of that. You've got to have, you know, the accordion made it. We can't tell them what that's
right.
all about, but
right.
the accordion made it in here.
Right.
And so Buzz and I just had such a great relationship to do this book. I loved his writing. How he took all of the things that I had gone through in my head and was able to organize all of that, put it together in a great read. He's an amazing writer.
So would you just talk, and
talk,
he's
talk,
writing
talk,
and
talk, talk,
taking
talk.
Notes and then...
Yeah, it was a lot of talking. But he knew my story so well. He really pushed hard to go as deep as you possibly could.
Was that hard for you?
Anytime it's hard when you look at your life. And the big thing was... obviously, anybody in their life, there's regrets. You did things wrong. I've did things wrong, okay? I had times in my life where I was not a good parent, where I was dealing with all my own issues, and I was honest about those types of things, and I really needed to be, and I needed to tell my family and the ones that I wasn't good with. I had to tell them, hey, basically, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at one of the passages in the book you write, although I feel much more empathy on the inside, I still have trouble showing it on the outside. Although I am observant of others, I still talk about myself too much. Maybe...
Here I am talking about myself. Sorry.
Then you write, maybe I spend too much time over the way I look. So it struck me that you're being brutally honest about yourself.
I am. Yeah, that's what that book is about being honest with yourself, with your soul, about who you are as a person. And to be able to get to the point in your life where you can not only be honest with yourself, you can't do this, you can't transition or do that, unless you know in your soul it's the right thing to do. And then it becomes, okay, how do I deal with family members? How do I deal, in my case, because I was a public figure and getting destroyed by the tabloids for years and years and years. And they do nothing, but they just destroyed me all the time. Obviously, I can't do this privately. I would love to go to Alaska in the backwoods, you know, and transition and, you know, live in a cabin in the middle of nowhere. But eventually they would find me. Okay, then it becomes a tabloid.
That's right.
Then it would become a tabloid story again.
Right.
So I don't want that. I want to control my narrative.
Right.
I want to control my story. And so once I decided, okay, I'm going through this, first person I called, which I talk about in the book, is Alan Nirob, who was my PR guy back in the 80s. He was kind of just beginning at Rogers and Cowan. The New York Times was going to write an article that I was a cross-dresser, because the 80s by far were the most difficult times for me. I thought I was going to transition before I was 40, you know, before 1990, I'm doing this. And, you know, so I was on hormones for 4.5 years, I'm in therapy, I'm getting electrolysis done, I'm doing all these things. Obviously, your look changes, and the rumor mill started.
Right.
And so the New York Times is going to write an article that I was a cross-dresser, which is not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm being honest, it's not the case, I'm trans, okay? Not a cross-dresser. So I called my lawyer in, my manager at the time, and Alan, and I sat him down and I told him my story, and you got to stop it, and Alan stopped it. Well, for the next 25, 28 years, I didn't use Rogers and Cowan any longer, didn't need a PR person. And so when I decided to do this, the first person I knew I was going to call was Alan, and now he's the president of Rogers and Cowan, so I was shocked that he was still there. I called Rogers and Cowan, you know, call up information, Rogers and Cowan, and I get the number, call, and I say, Alan Nirob? And that 1 second, I said, no way, he's still there.
Right.
Found out he's in the president's office now. So Alan and I said, you got to come out. And he says, I'll be out, you know, on Saturday. And we sat down, we came up with a plan on how can we do this? Because right now I'm in the gutter. It's the tabloids, it's horrible. How can we take, because I don't deserve to be in the gutter. My community does not deserve to be in the gutter, okay? We need to be respected, and it needs to be done right. Not just for me, but for everybody.
Right.
And so taking it out of the gutter and putting it with Diane Sawyer, ABC News,
Vanity
credible,
Fair.
You know, and then, you know, backing it up with Vanity Fair. It was kind of scary. Here I was still Bruce, and he says, okay, well, you got Diane Sawyer. And I'm going, oh, God, okay, all right. Bruce is going to play that one. I would never mention Caitlin's name, nothing. It was just right. Bruce's story. That's where it had to start. And then he calls me a couple of weeks later because I thought Vanity Fair would be a great place to go. I thought it was edgy enough, but also credible enough to give them the article. And he calls me back like a week later and says, well, you're on the cover of Vanity Fair. And I went, oh, my God, okay, here we go.
You're in it then, yeah.
Yeah, here we go.
So for anyone who still believes that transitioning is a choice, an option that you can exercise or not, your book will surely persuade them otherwise. You write that you took huge risks as Bruce in attempting to be who you really are, risks that had things gone awry would have inflicted irreparable harm on your reputation as Bruce Jenner, yet you took them anyway. So if you could tell us about just a couple of close calls, and I'm just going to give you three areas. You can just pick one if you want. Hotel lobbies, Starbucks, driving in your car.
Oh, I had close calls. Okay, but never got caught.
That's right. Can you give us one example?
Never got caught. I got pretty good. Only one time I was walking through the parking lot of LAX. This is back in the early 80s. I thought I was looking pretty good. And as I was walking through the dark parking lot, somebody said, like, I heard my name in the background. Scared me to death. I, like, ran, got in my car, and got the hell out of there.
And you were dressed
okay,
how?
I'm not doing a good enough job.
And how were you dressed at that time? At that moment?
As Caitlin, but probably it was kind of the beginning stages. You know, there's always a lot to learn. To be honest with you, when I read, especially at the beginning of the book, I read what I went through. Every time I read it, I cry. And I'm thinking, all this crap that I went through, sneaking around, doing this, taking nail polish off, putting nail polish back on, you know, I don't know. It just, every time I read it, because today my life is so simple. I just get up in the morning and be myself. How simple is that? It's just wonderful. It's a wonderful feeling.
It's just getting there.
Yeah. Right? But the one time, I don't know if you've heard, I like going to Starbucks, but anyway, that's a whole other story. Yeah. I've got a million shots of me coming out of Starbucks, okay, with my little coffee cup at Little Trancas Market, okay, because that's where the paparazzis hang out, and I'm not going to change going there because those damn people are there, okay? I'm going to live my life the way I want to live my life. If I got a Starbucks in there, I've got a Starbucks in there.
Well,
but I do wish Starbucks would send me a free card, but that's a whole other
deal. That's all right.
That's a whole other deal. But, one time, after years and years, the first time I ever spoke, I was giving a speech outside of Las Vegas. And I had dressed that night before, gave the speech, but I had all morning. And so I thought, well, I'm going to get up, get dressed. And so I get up, and I would go walk around a little bit. And I had never used my voice, because originally that's going to give you away, you know. And now I don't care. It's just my voice. Big deal, okay? And I went into a Starbucks when it was, like, empty and just asked for, you know, my little morning coffee. The lady was nice. I got my coffee, walked out, and I went, oh, my God.
There it is.
I did it, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
So your mother, Esther, she's, what, 90 now?
She turns 91 next month.
Next month. So I'm curious about, and it is in your book, what has been her reaction to your becoming Caitlin. And I also like you to address this. This is what you wrote in your book. My mom worries about me becoming lonely again. She thinks it would be nice for me to find a companion. So my question is she right? Are you looking? And if so, who should consider applying?
Yeah. Am I looking? I know my mom's wonderful. I mean, she's great. And she was the last person for me to tell.
Really?
It was just for me the hardest one to tell. Honestly, I had already shot Diane Sawyer and still not had told her. And I knew it was coming out in like 2 months. And I said, oh, my God, I got to. I've told my kids, my sister, everybody. And, you know, and Mom would always ask me, I was going through the grocery line and, you know, I saw this stuff. What's going on? And I would say, Mom, it's the tabloids. And finally I had to tell her, well, there's more to the story. As far as a companion, I have a lot of trans friends, and relationships are probably one of the most difficult things for them, being trans. I have a lot of friends that are 18, 19, 20 years old. They're at a different place in life. They want to date. They want to go out. They want to have a family. They want to have children, whichever way they can do it, but they want to have children, just like any normal human being. And I am kind of fortunate in a lot of ways, because I did this at a much later time in life. I already had all my children. I don't regret anything I've done, even transitioning at the age of 65. I don't regret anything. I had a wonderful life. I raised 10 children, wonderful kids, smart, intelligent children. I have my 11th grandchild. You know, it's kind of cool because all the grandchilds only know Caitlin. It's kind of cool. That's cool. I like that. And you know, I have this wonderful family, this wonderful large family, so it's not like I need a family, I need relationships. Yeah, if there was somebody in my life that really enjoyed a lot of the things I was doing and being a companion and friend, yeah, why not? I would welcome that, but it's not high on my priority list. High on my priority list is trying to make a difference, trying to bring this issue forward. Trying to make it better for the next generation coming up.
So let's talk about that for a moment, okay? Because
no.
That gets us to the area of politics. All right? So this is off in the book. You're a conservative.
First of all,
yes.
Politics is a page and a half of 120 pages.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
It's not a book about the Kardashians. It's
nope.
Not a book about politics, but I had to...
Sure.
I had to say something.
And indeed, any memoir worth its salt tells everything, and you have. So you're a conservative, and I can understand why Bruce Jenner was a conservative. He's a wealthy white male. He benefited from tax cuts supported by conservatives. He's handsome, he's an American icon, and the beneficiary of white privilege. I get that. Now that
I get all that?
Well, that's what you had. Now that you are Caitlin, a trans woman, you share a community that includes Black, Latinas, Latino trans women, most of whom are low income, most of whom have health insurance only because of the Affordable Care Act, and many of whom frequently face homophobic inspired violence. So the question is, how do you explain to them your continuing support of conservative causes that oftentimes conflict with the needs of that community? Or have I, by this question, persuaded you to reconsider your political affiliation?
Excellent question. This is how I've always... See, actually, we're born a month apart, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So we grew up in the same time.
Same year.
But obviously, your situation was very different than what my situation
right.
was. And I get that. I have lived a very privileged life, okay? But also, I have worked my ass off all my life, okay? It's not like anybody gave
right.
me that.
Right.
I worked to win the games. I tried to be smart in business. I raised wonderful kids. I worked for that.
You were the best in the world.
I was the best
right.
in the world.
In the world.
Those were good days.
Yes.
Okay. But it didn't tell the whole story. And so I understand that. But how can I use that and that platform to try to make a difference? My loyalties are not with the Republican Party. My loyalties are not with Donald Trump. Okay. Just because I believe in more, I believe in like the Constitution, limited government, obviously, lower taxes for everybody, less regulations, a thriving economy. I'm not a fan of the government. I'm a fan of the people of this country, okay, to get us out of any issue we got to get it out of. And they just have to be able to give the freedom to be able to do that. My issues or my loyalty lies with my community, to make it better for my community. I feel like I would rather try to convince the Republican Party to do a better job when it comes to equality for all and equality for the LGBTQ community than try to fight the Democrats on lowering taxes and less regulations and bigger government. So that's where my fight is. And I will fight the Republicans, I mean, big time. I have no problem. I don't know if you saw my little Instagram post the other day. I went after Donald Trump and Jeff Sessions. And it looks like here in the near future we're going to have to again. You know, like Trump, I did go back to the inauguration. The reason I went there is to meet people. I would say 80-90% of the things I do politically, you have no idea what I'm doing, and I do not do it publicly. I do it privately behind closed doors. I want the Republican Party to get to know a trans person. I literally have sat down at a private home having dinner with 15 evangelical Christian conservative Republican senators and congressmen, as we would call them, the enemy, okay? And I sat there with Zachary Drucker, who is my assistant and deals with all trans issues and one of the great trans women of all time. She's just wonderful. And we sat down, and I guarantee you, everybody in that room had never met anybody who was trans. Don't know the issues. And I told him, look, I'm a Christian. I do have conservative thoughts. I'm a Republican, okay? But I'm also trans. And we sat for 3 hours, talked about faith, talk about the issues of our community. And by the end of it, one of the guys in the back says, you know, hey, when we get to policy, could we talk to you? You know, if you come back. And I said, sure, that's the reaction that I want. I work very closely with the American Unity Fund.
And what is that?
They are headed up by Margaret Hoover as the president, and a guy named Tyler Deaton, who is the most greatest human being ever. I talked to him just before I came over here. Smartest guy. Their only mission statement is, and they're very well funded, to get the Republican Party to do a better job when it comes to all LGBTQ issues. And they are on top of everything. I mean, they know everything, where all the bodies are buried. I think the best thing that the Republican Party could ever do, I don't know if it's going to be able to do it, is to do a better job when it comes to equality. I would like to fight for that.
So what is your reaction then to the latest information is that tomorrow is National
Yes.
Prayer Day. And Trump has said that he is going to sign an executive order on religious freedom. And the executive order protects the tax-exempt status of any organization that has a belief that male and female and their equivalents refer to an individual's immutable biological sex as objectively determined by anatomy, physiology, genetics, or birth. That's just part of it. And it basically allows nonprofits, churches, to discriminate against the members of the LGBTQ community and do it with impunity. Mm-hmm. So what's your reaction to that?
I'm coming after them. Yeah, I will do it publicly. Yeah, if he messes with us, I will come after him. I will look at it very closely. If he does stuff like that, I honestly will probably call him the most anti-LGBTQ president we've had. I firmly believe that. I talked to him during the campaign, and I was hopeful, okay? I was hopeful. He was actually pretty good on gay issues, those types of things. And he even supported, you know, he brought it up at the convention and to a thunderous applause. So I thought that's positive. But also there was a girl named Jenna Telekova who was in 2012. She was in the Canadian Miss Universe pageant, a trans woman. And he really supported her. He owned the Miss Universe pageant. And he supported her. He said, hey, look, if she makes it to the finals, she's in and we're going to welcome her here. Which those are the types of things I thought are very good. I think he's surrounded himself, now that he's president, with some what I would look as bad people, okay, that are I'm not taking him off the hook, that are giving him bad advice. But he's the president. He's signing it. Damn it, he's responsible, yeah. Okay? We've got this Mark Green guy, you know, who I will verbal. I mean, I don't know if you see it, and anybody in our community, you know,
this fight is for Secretary this of the this, Army. Is that
what's that?
Is that the Secretary of the Army?
Secretary of the Army, who's the most confused guy. I mean, he's calling people who are trans. They have a disease. I don't have a disease. Okay, that. As far as the bathroom issue, it's the Bible telling him to fight it, and I'm going, are you kidding me? That's evil. You know, they're calling it me evil. Nobody's evil here, okay? So there are in the Republican Party some really bad people. We got to weed them out, and I will publicly go out. If that goes out, I will decide what I'm going to do, but I guarantee you,
we'll hear from.
I will be very verbal, okay? And because of the position that I'm in, that will get out very quickly. Originally, he wanted me to play golf with him when I went back to the inauguration. He comes up, oh, come on, Caitlin, you got to come down. Got to play golf, this and that. And I thought, you know what, that's a good time that I could go down there and spend 3 or 4 hours with him on a golf course, discuss the issues, get to know him a little bit better. No, I'm there to help for equality for our community, okay? And I thought that would be a good thing. And then I realized that I really don't think he's got a big ego. I don't think he wants to get beat by a 67-year-old trans woman.
And you would beat him.
So I thought. And then when the first Title IX decision came down,
it's on the back.
That absolutely just infuriated me. And the other thing is, I could not go play golf. I would be destroyed by my community, and I just couldn't do it. And so I've been verbally up against him. I did some Instagram posts the other day from the White House outside the gate. And yeah, kind of coming after him. He knows I'm around.
All right. You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California program with our guest, Caitlin Jenner. I'm Ladaris Cordell, your moderator. You can hear Commonwealth Club programs on the radio, catch up with program videos on the club's YouTube channel, and find the club on Twitter and Facebook. So, Caitlin, one way to change policies impacting the LGBTQ community is to be a politician. Have you thought about running for public office? And if so, would you run as a Republican, a Democrat, an independent? And what office, what might you might run for?
That's a big question.
Yeah.
I have been asked in the past, I have spoken at Republican events many years ago, and they all go, oh my God, you should get into politics and this and that. And I go, I don't want to do that. And so I've kind of stayed away from it. Now things have changed some. I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, hey, you know, maybe you should go after something like that. And of course, when I said it on The View the other day, the next thing you know, I'm running for president. Yeah, that I'm running for president. First woman, first trans woman ever to run for president, I'm running for president. I was thinking maybe I would start with the mayor of Malibu, you know, and kind of work my way up a little bit and kind of learn the business, you know. So, what I'm doing right now, over this next year, I want to make it better politically for our community. Where can I do the best? Where can I be the most valuable to make change? Is it from the outside and kind of working the outside and working all the things? Or is it better from the inside? You only get one vote, you know, and from the inside. Maybe I can be on the outside and influence more votes. I don't know. So I am just checking this out.
So it's a possibility.
It would be a possibility, yes. But I have to see where I can do the best job.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
You write in your book, "I remember crying when I received my new birth certificate from the state of New York, stating that I am female and giving my name as Caitlin Marie Jenner." Why the tears?
Bruce was a good person. Did a lot of really good things. I'm very proud of him. He lived outside me all my life. Won the games, was morally a good person, worked his little butt off, raised wonderful children, was successful in the American dream. Did a lot of really good things. Was it me? No. The last person or the last thing I had to get through to be able to actually go through this was my faith. I talked to all my children, and the last person I called was my pastor, Pastor Brad. Love Pastor Brad. Because every time I would sit in church, I would listen to him talk, and my head wasn't even into the sermon. My head was into myself, and I'm going, why? Why, God, did you do this? Why is my identity and my gender in my head and in my soul every day, 24 hours a day, 365 days out of the year? You can't take two aspirin and get plenty of sleep and wake up the next morning, you're going to be fine. Okay? It's just, how do you deal with it? Okay? And I would ask, God, why did you do this? Is there a reason? Am I doing a good job? You know, how am I dealing with this? And when I brought my pastor out and we sat down, he had no idea, besides he had seen all the tabloid crap over the last year. I told him my story, and I told him about my faith. And I kind of, that night, as I'm laying there in bed, had kind of a revelation. I thought, you know what? It's kind of the last hurdle I had to get over with. Was maybe this is the reason God put me on this earth. At this time and at this place and time, to one, live my life authentically. Can't do it unless you know in your soul it is the right thing to do. Live my life authentically, but in doing that, can you make a difference? Can you bring this issue forward? I couldn't do it in the 80s. Why? Because it just wasn't time. Time in society, time about this issue people understand. Only before me was Rene Richards, the tennis player, 1977 came out. Now things had changed. We had other people that had gone before me, the Laverne Cox and Janet Mocks, Gina Rosaros. The trans issue was moving forward. It was a different time. So maybe I can add my name to that conversation and help the next generation. It's not about me. I'm fine. It's about the next generation.
So the part of your book that I just read about the birth certificate reminded me of a case involving a trans woman who petitioned for a name change in my court in 1994. We're talking 23 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And when transitioning, it just wasn't done. And after I granted her request and ordered that her name was officially changed to Lisa Kathleen, I received a letter from her thanking me for how I had handled her case. And it reads in part, I'm going to just give you a snippet from this. I have a question after it.
This is so good.
This is what she wrote to me. "In the process I have been going through, I have met and had to deal with many intolerant people, people who seem unable to deal with things they can't understand. These people include, for me, an ex-employer and, unfortunately, my parents." And then she ends, "I know that the standard response to comments like mine is, well, I'm just doing my job. And while you are doing much more." And then she ended her letter, "It is people like you who maintain my faith in the human race. Thank you." So my question to you.
That was so good.
Caitlin, are there people who maintain your faith in the human race? And if so, who are they?
Boy, nobody's ever asked me. Other people that have, I think faith is important in life. I think it's a basis of what life is all about. I'm not the type of person that goes to church all the time and studies and reads the Bible and this and that, but there is a faith inside me that I feel God is protecting me, helping me through this process. When you read that article, and that was 94?
Yes.
See, things have changed a lot since 1994. But still, there are so many things the same. Getting your name changed like that is a tough deal. There are still, I think, 19 states who have anti-discrimination laws in place. There's 200 cities that have protections for trans people. But there's still 31 states that you cannot get your gender marker changed on your birth certificate. Okay? And as you were just talking about on that last page, about Trump saying, going all the way back of what it says on your birth certificate, which has nothing to do with who you are, that's very upsetting because you can't even change your birth. I was lucky I was in New York, a liberal state, and I was able to get it all the way down from birth certificate all the way, you know, through driver's license. And it's very expensive, very difficult to do, and you have to have a lot of very understanding people along that way. So, yeah, we have a lot of issues, and especially trans women of color, by far, is the biggest issue, that and the suicide rate for young trans people.
So let's talk Kardashian for a bit. In 2008...
Oh, why not?
In 2008, your Aunt Ellie sent you a letter read in part, "What a disappointment you are to your public, Bruce. I haven't heard one complimentary thing from anyone yet. The consensus is that you look like a milky toast and henpecked husband and stepfather. You do look very uncomfortable in every scene you are in." Now, she was referring to your appearances on Keeping Up with the Kardashians. It's now the longest-running reality show in TV history, 12 seasons and counting, and it's aired in 150 countries. So, back to Aunt Ellie. Was she right? Were you a milky toast, henpecked, and uncomfortable husband on the show? And how did your reality show, Call Me Kate, differ from Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
That was pretty much me, yes. I was always around very strong women. And Chris certainly is a very strong woman. And I'm not saying that in a negative sense. I like strong women. She's a very good businesswoman, very strong. I learned a lot from Chris, but I didn't mind. I never in my life, because of who I was, felt like I was worthy or that my opinion was worthy. So I always kind of stayed in the background when it came to strong people. Because I've got all these secrets. I got all these things inside. So I don't have confidence in myself to put my voice forward. And I had no problem playing that milky toast little one in the background. You know, I know I used to get letters all the time from people saying, you know, you don't even have a credit card. You know, and I said, well, you know, I have one credit card, but you know, this and that, and the financial side of it, and all that kind of stuff. I did that show for the main reason I did that show, and Chris and I worked together to get it on the air, was for my kids, an opportunity for my children. And from that standpoint, it worked. My kids have all done very, very well because of that show and all branched out into different things. So that was my main concern. My concern was not I wanted to be a celebrity or a star. I have all that. I want my kids to have an opportunity. Being a celebrity is a business. And if you're smart, you can create a good business. And like Kim, very, very smart. And she has stayed relevant, you know, for the last 10, 12, 13 years, you know, in the public eye, and she's on a reality show. I mean, that's pretty amazing. She knows how to push it. She knows how to play that game, and it's a game that you play. And, you know, Kendall's the top model in the world, and Kylie's rocking it with her cosmetic company, and, yeah, and they're just smart, smart kids.
So what about your reality show?
I Am Kate was so near and dear to my heart. When I was transitioning, I knew that that was one of the things I wanted to do, to be able to, since I had a... Are we in trouble?
Nope, we're good.
Am I guilty?
No, not yet.
Guilty. And it was kind of because I've done so much reality television, I needed to learn. And I had never, when I transitioned, I had never met anybody who's trans. Then I found out that one of the people on the crew was a trans guy, and nobody ever told me. I said, "What do you mean? You've met somebody who's trans?" I said, "Who?" And he says, "Taylor." I said, "Taylor's trans?" I didn't know, you know. But I didn't meet until we shot the first shows, when Candace and Shandy and all the girls came in. And I knew at that point I had so much to learn. And it was a great way to go through that transition with all the girls and helping me through, and, you know, things and issues that are out there. So it lasted 2 seasons. I was hoping it lost a lot of momentum when the girls, when we were on the bus and we brought up the political side of it and it got a little heated. We lost a lot of listeners. I have a lot of watchers at that point, and never really recovered. I learned so much by doing that show, and I really, it was a good show, and it brought this issue farther forward. Wow. Farther forward.
Well,
but don't worry, I've got other things going on.
Right. Do you want to give us a hint?
No, I can't talk about it.
All right, but okay.
So, yeah, there's other things out there. Get this book off and going.
Okay.
And
who knows?
Yeah.
So before we take our audience questions, I'd like to do a quick lightning round with you.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to give you a word or a phrase, and then I just want your quick response.
Go. This is so much fun.
All right, here we go. Paparazzi.
I hate them.
All right. Here you go.
Simple.
Laverne Cox.
I love Laverne. She did so much for me. She did so much for the community. She was one of the first ones really to go public and work as a trans woman. And I got a lot of respect for her. She's very smart, very articulate. And I watched all the interviews, like with Katie Kirk and all these things when she was, you know, on starting on Orange is the New Black and everything. And really has done a great job. Yeah.
All right. Gun control.
I support the Second Amendment. Yeah. I support the Second Amendment. It's the one unique thing that we have in our country and that in the world.
What about gun control?
Gun control? I think we have a lot of controls on guns in our country. I think we need to enforce those in controls. And there are so many guns in the system right now that I don't know if we're past that, you know? I mean, okay. I want people to be able to protect themselves, you know? I don't want them in the hands of criminals and bad people. That's almost impossible to do. But Second Amendment, we have the right to defend ourselves.
Okay. Pepsi commercial.
God, how can I do that in one word? I love my daughter, Kendall. She's an angel. And as she said, she was a model. She was excited. Cindy Crawford had done it before, and she thought, this is great. When she shot it, she actually thought it was, you know, it talked about join the conversation. That's what the whole thing was about. Other people took it a different way. And it was a small group, but they had a legitimate point. And, you know, Pepsi immediately pulled it. And she was hurt just from the sense that she didn't see what other people saw in the commercial. But she was fine with it. Yeah. She was fine. Okay, it went, and she moves on to the next thing. You know, I mean, anytime you get involved with the project, you want it to be good, and you want it to be successful, and that's just human nature. Okay. And it just didn't work out in that case. But Kendall is just a great kid.
Last one, Halloween.
Ooh. Back in the old days, you could sneak around. Yes. And get away with it. had some great costumes back then. And actually, you could drive around. You didn't have to worry about getting caught.
That's right.
Although I did one time. I was stupid enough. I drove my Porsche. And I thought, it's the night before Halloween. And usually I drove a car that was kind of unmarked and nobody really knew I was in it. But I had a Porsche at the time. So I was driving it. And I pull up to a light. Looking pretty good. But this is way back when. And car pulls up beside me. And I hear this yelling. And it was my next door neighbor.
But it's Halloween almost.
It's the next day is Halloween. So what are you doing? And I said, hey, I'm going to a Halloween party. Okay, see you later. And I kind of got away with it. They never brought it up again. Yeah. Yeah. So Halloween was always that time that you could kind of, get away with it. Get away with it.
So we're going to ask
now
questions
the tough
now.
Questions.
So here you go. Here's your first one from our audience. Why did you choose the name Caitlin?
Ooh, toughest thing in the world is to name yourself. Oh, my God. I tried every name. I would watch the Miss America pageant. Okay. No, I would. I would sit there on my little couch, and I'd be going like this, and be all by myself, and I would have a little pen and a piece of paper, and I would watch all the girls go across the thing, and, at the beginning, all 50 of them, they get the name pops up. And I would write it down. What do I think the way she looks, and what about that name, and go over and over and over. Then this Heather came into my head a million years ago when I was in college because of this group had this song called Heather. And I just liked the song. And I said, well, maybe that's it. Maybe this is it. And so you struggle with that. It came down to, just before Diane Sawyer, I told a lady, Rhonda, who's now my assistant, I told her my story. And so the first thing everybody says, well, what do we call you? And I go, oh, God, I said, that is the toughest thing. I've struggled with that for 60 years. What do you call me? So she goes, you know what? I always like the name Caitlin and spell it C-A-I-T-L-Y-N. And that was one of the names on the list, except I spelled it with an I. And that was on the top three. That was right there. And at some point, you just have to bite the bullet and you say, okay, there was a little karma going on here. That's it. So, of course, when I told Kim, she goes, I told her, I'm doing this. And then the shock of it all. And she goes, well, what am I going to call you? And I said, well, Caitlin. And she goes, well, good, you stayed with the K's. I didn't know how to break the news to her. I tried to do it softly, and I said, well, I'm spelling it with a C. And she goes, oh, so I spelt it with a C.
So this
I couldn't
is
go the K route.
Thanks
That's
to Rhonda.
That's way too close.
Thanks to Rhonda.
Thanks to Rhonda, yes, yeah.
Wow. Next question. What do you say to a 6-year-old boy and the mom who asks his mom, when do I get to be a girl?
The hardest thing is growing up being trans. On the kid, on the parents, obviously the suicide rate, list goes on and on and on of problems. The number one thing I say to a parent, and first of all, I am not a therapist. I'm only giving my advice, okay? Is just love your child. Love your child, okay? Number one, love them to death. If, let's say, the 6-year-old, the mother's watching the little 6-year-old boy playing with dolls, okay? And the mother's going, oh, my God, what's going on here? My little boy wants to play with dolls. Sit back and say, wait a second. Look at your child down there. And look how much joy your child is having playing with some dolls. Don't spoil that by pulling them away and giving them a truck or something. Let them be themselves. They will figure it out, And your job as a parent is to be there for them. We have a terrible problem with trans kids getting kicked out of houses and parents that don't understand. Homelessness in our community is overwhelming, you know? Yeah. We have a lot of issues and a lot of things to do.
Thank you. Next question. We want to help be catalysts for creating accelerated acceptance of the trans community. What are two small individual things we can do in our everyday life now?
This is what I try to do. Most people you meet or talk to or you're out in public in have never met anybody who's trans. I take, and everybody's around me, I try to be a good person when I'm around. I try to be nice to people. I give them hugs. I take selfies with them. I want their experience, their first experience, most likely, with a trans person, to be a positive, uplifting experience. You know, I don't want to be my nose stuck up in the air or, you know, I want it to be a good experience. I think the way we constantly represent ourselves to the public, we constantly have to work and take it personally. That I want to be a hardworking activist. I want to be a part of society, an active part of society, and I want to be a good person. And I want people to walk away from meeting me going, my God, that Caitlin was so nice, you know? That's what I want for our community. I have met, over the last 2 years, some of the absolute greatest people who are trans, who have done amazing things with their life. I always tell everybody, find a trans person instead of going, oh, my God, you know, what do I do? What do I say? What pronouns do I use? Do I touch him? Not. Forget it. Go up there. Give him a hug. Say, I love you. How are you doing? You know? And start up a conversation. I guarantee you, that person will be one of the most interesting people and interesting life stories that you'll ever hear. And listen to them. Listen to their struggles. Listen to their good times, this and that. You know, our community is a vital part of society. This is an issue that does not have borders. It's not just happening here in the United States. It doesn't stop at the border. This is humanity. Like the quote I have in the beginning of the book, you know, biology loves variations. Biology loves differences. Society hates it, by Milton Diamond. And for me, when I read that, I went, oh, my God, that's what we're dealing here. We want society to love us. We want what the gay community has. What the gay community has, they have fought for the last 20, 30 years, 40 years. They have fought for equality, for understanding, and have come a long, long way. They've fought it everywhere they go. If they lose the vote on marriage equality, they go to the courts. I mean, it just doesn't stop. They're relentless. Boom, 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 boom. And you know what? Society slowly has come along. I was watching just a couple of weeks ago, Good Morning America, and there was Sam Champion on, who's a news or weather guy. And I was sitting there in bed, and I'm watching it. It was the weekend, so he's on Good Morning America, and he's talking. You know, they got the little table talk. And there's Sam Champion, who's been at ABC for 25, 30 years. And he's standing there talking about him and his husband. And I'm going, wow, how cool is that? I guarantee you, when he started at ABC 25, 30 years ago, he kept his mouth shut, you know, about what his sexual preference is. To where 25 years later, the trans community is behind the gay community. But what I want is the exact same thing. We have to fight things, we're going to fight him. We're going to fight it in the court. If Trump does this tomorrow, you know, see you in court. That's what we have to do. We have to constantly learn from what the gay community has done and bring our issues. It's going to take a while. It may not happen in my lifetime, but, you know, that's
it's
what
happening.
We got to do.
It's happening.
It's happening.
Absolutely. Another question. Has your position on gay marriage evolved over the last 2 years?
This is where I got in trouble. Okay. Has it evolved? Yes, it's evolved. I mean, we're the same age. I mean, if you would have told me, you know, 30, 40 years ago, you know, that there would be marriage equality, I would have said, I don't see that, okay? But like everybody, it's been evolving. Now, when I was on the Ellen DeGeneres show, she, during the commercial break, she goes, well, she asked the exact same question that you just asked. I heard you evolved over the years when it came to marriage equality. Now I know I'm talking to a gay woman in a, you know, in a gay marriage. And I said, yeah, there was an evolution to it. She goes, I would just love to share that with you when we come back. I said, great. I said, I have no problem with it. So when I came back, I didn't word it right, you know, because every time I'm so scrutinized on the way I use words. I didn't start off by saying, I am for marriage equality, you know. I am all 100% now. Was it a progression and kind of work backwards? Would have helped. So I told her, I started off, yeah, I conservative views, I said, didn't understand it, what the word marriage was, you know, 20 years ago, how important that was to the community. But I've learned and, you know, I'm on board. And then she goes, well, it sounds like you're really not. I was kind of surprised when she said that. And it kind of, I've seen the reruns of it, I kind of backed up a little bit. I said, no, I said, I'm fine. But it was a progression. And then next week, she was on Howard Stern doing an interview and just blasted me, and then Howard Stern's blasting me. I can't believe Caitlyn Jenner's not for marriage equality, you know? And they really misrepresented because that's not what I said. So, especially in our community, I mean, I still get stuff. The hate on the internet is just overwhelming. But no, I am all for marriage equality, okay?
Great. Next question. Great. Is there any one thing you regret from your decision to transition? And then it goes, by the way, in 1976, you were my man crush.
Okay, who is that? Dang. So,
is there anything you regret about your decision?
First of all, I have absolutely no regrets whatsoever. I've never been in a better place in my life than I am right now. Never been happier, more content. I'm in the best place I've ever been. Okay, so there's no regrets. But in the media, there was this one guy, I don't even know who the hell he was, you know, it was going up that I was going to detransition. Okay? Yeah, right. Looking like this, I'm going to detransition? Are you kidding me? So, yeah, and then he goes on that he knows the Kardashians and I'm coming back and I don't like being Caitlyn and I have all these regrets and I'm going, are you kidding me? That's not the case, but it's out in the media. But the problem there, I have a young, at my church, there's this young little trans boy who the mother is struggling with it, the father is struggling with it. And I was at church one day after Caitlyn had come out, and the mother comes over and starts talking with me about her son. Actually, it's female right now, but her son. And so the mother was talking so much, and he was staying in the background, that after church was over, I'm thinking, you know, you got to save one soul at a time. Okay, this is like my little mission now. So I took him out into the parking lot, and I said, your mom never even gave you a chance to talk. How are you doing? Saying, you know, I really wasn't doing very well, and actually showed me on a wrist where I had tried to slit his wrist. I went, whoa, okay, don't go there. Okay, here's my number, my cell number. I said, before you even talk to your parents, you call my ass up or you start thinking about something like that, I will get my butt over there and you're not doing that, okay? It's not even an option, okay? And I said, and we started communicating, texting back and forth. Well, then I'm at church one day because the father's not on board. And, you know, he takes me up back out to the parking lot and said, are you going back and all that sort of stuff? Because there's all these articles. And my father is using it against me. See, Caitlyn, she's not, because she's going back to old Bruce, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And I, you know, I said, tell your father, you know, first of all, no, I'm not going back. This is a bunch of BS. So things like that when they say if I have regrets or if I'm going back to the old Bruce, okay, they do have their effect on people. And this poor kid was really having a tough time with his parents because then they used it against him.
How's he doing now?
Actually pretty good. Yeah. Everything's kind of calmed down. In high school, you know how that's really tough? I mean, it's a tough time to get through. But I see him at church all the time and, you know, try to give him pep talks. And
he has your phone number.
What's that?
He has your phone number.
Oh, yeah. Got my number. Call me anytime. I said, hey, call me. Yeah. Shandy told me that at the beginning on the show. Shandy, she works at L.A. Children's Hospital with this program called Blush for basically gender nonconforming kids. And the first day when we're having dinner and I was getting to meet all the girls for the first time and we were talking about the suicide rates and this and that, Shandy went up to me because she's had some kids even at Blush that she had lost through suicide. And Shandy goes, you can't beat yourself up on this stuff. You cannot save every soul. But you can save a soul one at a time, you know? And that has stuck with me from the beginning. Like with this little young guy, you can save him one at a time. And everybody needs to go out there and save one soul at a time. And if we do that, we'll make a difference in the world.
Absolutely. So if we can get a quick answer to this question. As a sports psychologist, how can I help break the stigma around trans athletes? Even women who have high testosterone levels are ridiculed.
I am all for trans athletes being able to compete in their authentic self. Try to get as short of answer as possible. The Olympic Committee has been dealing with this for a very, very, very long time. A lot of other sports now, they have no idea what they're doing. Although there is a trans golfer in Australia, girl, the Olympic Committee, back in the old days when I was competing, all the women had to take a swath of the inside of their, get a saliva test to get DNA and everything and make sure they are women, authentic women. Those were the years of the East German girls and the Russian girls. Woo. I even wondered, you know. This girl, actually, in the weight room, my last lifting workout, I'm going in there. I am, like, competing in 5 days. This is the highest quality, toughest workout. And this East German discus thrower comes in and sits down next to me with these two thugs and puts 300 pounds on her back as she's doing sitting presses sets of 10. I couldn't even do that. I said, the girls in this room are stronger than I am, and I got to go compete in the games in like a couple of weeks. So I even had my wondering. But no, the Olympic Committee has, they do not do those saliva tests anymore. They have, over the last 20-something years, really done a good job in compiling information on trans athletes, on testosterone levels, going both ways, male to female, female to male, because they've had to deal with this. I remember a sailor who had testicular cancer, had them both removed, and then had to take hormone or take testosterone, and all of a sudden he becomes illegal to sail. We have had one half-miler, female, that you would look at her and you go, I don't know, you know, found out she was intersexed. Okay, what do we do with intersex? What do we do with intersex athletes? Can they just not compete in either one? And so the Olympic Committee has come up over the last 5-8 years, a standard. You don't have to have gender confirmation surgery. You just, what are your hormones levels? And if you're on, let's say, male to female, and you're on estrogen, what the estrogen levels have to be, the length of time that you have to be on those, if you make that criteria, you have no advantage whatsoever, and you can compete in as your authentic self. So we can learn a lot from them.
Well, unfortunately, and I mean that sincerely, unfortunately, we have reached the point in the program where we only have time for one last question.
Uh-oh.
So here it goes.
And this is your question?
I'm going to ask the last one, all right? And the question...
You're sure we really need to do this?
We're going to do this.
Okay.
Thought long and hard about this question. Who gets to play you in the movie?
Oh, maybe we'll come up here and do auditions? How does that sound? Who plays me in the movie? There you go. That's a tough one. What a tough role to play. That is a good question. I don't know. I have said, it's funny, Tyler Deaton with the American Unity Fund, when I was on the phone just before I came down here, he was all of a sudden, he said he became obsessed with who would play that. And he was going to send me the name of some actor that he thought could do it. I was thinking maybe like Rob Lowe. He's kind of cute, very good actor. I know him. Maybe know the story. No.
Too short.
That's exactly what they said. Too short.
What about?
Because, you know, girl, you got to have the height. There's every reason in the world not to transition. I mean, I'm too tall. Okay. Well, too tall. I've always been 6'2". Okay. And so about 9 months ago, I got a physical. And they take your height. And the lady says, okay, you're 6'1". And I go, no, I'm 6'2". And she goes, no, you're not, you're 6'1". I go, no, we got to remeasure me. So I get over on the side, I put the little thing on the top of my head. Sure enough, 6'1". And I'm going, this is perfect. At the age of 90, I'll be a perfect 5'10".
Very good. Wow. So my pick.
Who would you? Yeah, who?
Richard Gere or Kate Blanchett.
Ooh. You know what? That's actually good because you could go the other direction.
Exactly.
Like, what's her name? Who did, what was the name? The actor. Hilary Swank. Yeah. Actually, the audio version of the book, which actually I listened to the other day because I had not, we read it, Buzz and I went through it 3 times, cover to cover, and I was like, the week before I was going out, I thought, you know what, I need to read it again just to get it in my head, everything we said, because I hadn't read it in like 3 months. And they sent the audio version. I thought, this is great. But I did the opening in the audio version because I'm a dyslexic kid, and I've just never been a good reader. And it would be kind of a struggle, and I really needed somebody good. And one of the people they said I tried to get to do the audio version and just read the book was Hilary Swank. I would love for her to do it, but they wound up using somebody else, and she wound up not doing it. But I thought she would be perfect because she had been through, what was the name of that? But that's it, yeah. Thank you. This is such a smart audience.
Of course, San Francisco. So I say sincerely to you, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlyn Jenner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And it was a pleasure.
Great. Good. Our thanks to Caitlyn Jenner, author of The Secrets of My Life. We also thank our audiences here and on radio, television, and the Internet. This program has been part of the Commonwealth Club's Good Lit series, underwritten by the Bernard Osher Foundation. We also remind everyone here that signed copies of Caitlyn Jenner's book are for sale in the lobby. Thank you for remaining seated until Caitlyn has left the room. I am LaDaris Cordell, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know, is adjourned.
Yay! Thank you.
You're awesome.